Exawos Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Afghanistan police say at least seven people are dead, dozens wounded, after a nearly 10-hour long attack on the American University of Afghanistan in Kabul ended Thursday. Police say hundreds of staff and students were rescued after being trapped inside the university complex. Police say at least two attackers were killed. So far, no militant groups are claiming responsibility for the attack. Earlier this month, an American professor and his Australian colleague were kidnapped at the school. No group claimed responsibility for the kidnapping, and the professor's whereabouts remain unknown. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says the White House is determined to listen to every scrap of evidence Turkey provides before deciding if it will extradite Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, who Turkey blames for organizing last month's failed military coup, a charge he denies. Biden met in Ankara Wednesday with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He tried to head off Erdogan's impatience by explaining that American courts require firm evidence before a suspect is surrendered to another country.
When you go to American court, you can't go into a court and say, this is a bad guy, generally. You have to say, this is a guy or a woman who committed the following explicit crime.
Turkey's prime minister says any delay in sending Gulen to Turkey could harm U.S.-Turkish relations. A day after a powerful earthquake rocked central Italy, authorities said 247 people died and more than 360 were injured. Rescuers are continuing to search for people buried in the debris. The hardest hit areas include the towns of Amatrice and Akumali. A strong earthquake shook north central Myanmar Wednesday. At least three people were killed. The quake damaged about 60 ancient Buddhist pagodas. This is VOA News. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump told a rally Wednesday night in Jackson, Mississippi, that voters in the U.S. face issues just as Britain. Trump, a supporter of Britain's exit from the European Union, brought out a leader of Britain's independence movement to underscore his point of view.
On June 23rd, the people of Britain voted to declare their independence, which is what we're looking to do also, folks, from their international government, which hasn't worked.
Trump said it's time for the U.S. to declare its independence from what he said is corporate control of the government, special interests, and a rigged system. Meantime, Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton finally responded to Trump's repeated allegations of improprieties stemming from her affiliation with the Clinton Foundation during her time as Secretary of State, telling a CNN interviewer, Trump's comments were, in her words, ridiculous. And she said, her work as Secretary of State was not influenced by outside sources. Also Wednesday, Clinton's campaign proposed a public health rapid response fund, which would give the president authority to release millions of dollars to immediately tackle a health emergency without having to wait for Congress to approve the money. The impeachment trial of Brazil's suspended president gets underway Thursday. Supporters and critics of Dilma Rousseff will testify before Brazil's Senate, which is expected to remove her from office next week on charges of breaking budget laws. Brazil's first female president is charged with spending without congressional approval and manipulating government accounts to disguise the extent of the deficit and the run-up to her 2014 re-election. A U.S. defense official said Wednesday that four Iranian military vessels moved too close to a U.S. destroyer in what was called an unsafe and unprofessional encounter. The incident occurred in the Strait of Hormuz. And U.S. Olympic gold medal swimmer Katie Ledecky threw out the ceremonial first pitch as the Washington Nationals hosted the Baltimore Orioles Wednesday night.
Slowly but surely, and I expect it'll sink in as we move forward the next couple weeks, and once I get back in the pool and start working towards my next goals, I know you kind of just have to put everything you've done behind you and start working towards the next thing.
Ledecky talking about her accomplishments in Rio. She intends to take some time off before beginning her freshman year at Stanford University, where she will join the swim team. I'm Michael Brown in Washington. For more news, join us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The people of Gabon go to the polls this Saturday in an election that may pose a challenge to the 50-year rule of the Bongo family.
The result may hinge on popular discontent over the state of the Gabonese economy, which relies heavily on oil revenue and has been deeply impacted by the drop of oil prices in the past couple of years.
That's views Emily Yop in Accra. Zambia's main opposition leader requests a meeting with President Edgar Lungu. Zimbabwe police clashed again on Wednesday with supporters of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. And Uganda's former presidential candidate urges the diaspora to continue to support the struggle for democracy in Uganda.
To continue engaging with the governments of the countries where they stay and indeed to solicit their support in the engagements with the regime at home and also their engagements with those of us who are challenging the status quo.
That's Dr. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change. Alternative rites of passage for girls are taking root in Kenya, and youth unemployment is on the rise worldwide. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gabon's President Ali Bongo is seeking another term in office, but is facing a tough challenge from former African Union Commission Chairperson Jean Ping. The run-up to the vote has been tense, with the opposition questioning Bongo's citizenship and eligibility. Emily Yob sets the scene for the vote from Accra.
10 challengers are vying to end nearly 50 years of rule by the Bongo family during a one-run presidential poll on Saturday. The result may hinge on popular discontent over the state of the Gabonese economy, which relies heavily on oil revenue and has been deeply impacted by the drop of oil prices in the past couple of years. Gabonese economic analyst Maïs Mouissi explained that the state budget has shrunk. So in terms of investment, of social policies, of credit, there were some budget cuts. Companies have been laying off staff, and there has been quite a number of social conflicts. While the opposition blames the government's inability to diversify the economy, incumbent President Ali Bongo remains confident. He says his government has built 700 kilometers of roads and a wider electricity network. Speaking to VOA's Idriss Afol earlier this year, Bongo said that he has a program. I know what I've achieved, and I believe I can have the support of my fellow citizens, he said. The son of Gabon's longtime leader, Omar Bongo, took over the presidency from his father in 2009 after a disputed election. Bongo's main challenger is a 73-year-old Jean Ping. The son of a Chinese immigrant, Ping is a former ally of Bongo's father. He was a minister in Omar Bongo's government and even married his daughter. He switched over to the opposition in 2014. Jean-Gaspard Ntoutoum, Ping's campaign communication officer, said that there has been a major setback in terms of individual freedoms. And then there are all the problems of corruptions and embezzlement of public funds. Three major opposition candidates have rallied behind Ping over the past few weeks. Analyst Maïs Mouissi says it could be a game changer. For once, the opposition has a real chance at winning, Mouissi says. The opposition tried to call for the disqualification of Ali Bongo's candidacy, saying he faked his birth certificate and was born abroad. Police violently broke up a protest in the capital, and Bongo remains on the ballot. The electoral campaign ends on Friday, the day before the election. Results are expected next week. Emily Yap for VOA News in Accra.
Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party says President Edgar Lungu will not meet main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, the UPND. Mr. Hichilema called for a meeting between the two to resolve what he called pertinent national issues, including the ongoing violence in parts of the country following the August 11 general election and referendum. Frank Bualia, deputy campaign manager for the ruling Patriotic Front Party, tells reporter Peter Clotty that President Lungu will not meet the opposition leader until Hichilema renounces the violence allegedly being perpetrated by his supporters.
Yes, when the Secretary General called the president to inform him that Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of the UPND, he has been trying to reach him by phone, and he said to the people he was addressing, if any one of you has a number for Lungu, give it to me so that I can talk to him because we have to save lives. The president was very categorical. He said, let that man abandon his violent ways. Let him choose to walk the path of peace. Then I'm going to meet him.
Why wouldn't the president show himself as a uniter or a unifier to bring the country together to renounce this kinds of violence? Why wouldn't he meet as a sign to all Zambians to eschew violence? Why would he play politics, so to speak, with this? Because that is the accusation being leveled against the president, since the president of all.
As I indicated, and must say, he was not going to accept the outcome of the just-ended election in Zambia. He claimed foreign voters on the voters' roll that the PFO had registered to rig the election, but the documents they have filed in the Constitutional Court is not talking about foreign voters. So what I'm trying to say is that President Lungu cannot meet Agahinde Hichilema until he abandons his violent ways.
Critics of the president are saying that his refusal and pronouncement that he is not going to meet Hichilema is in itself very divisive, not somebody who wants to ensure the country remain peaceful, despite his promises to use draconian measures to ensure the country maintains its territorial integrity. What do you say to that?
Majority of Zambians are very happy that President Lungu has given a conviction to Mr. Agahinde Hichilema that he abandoned his violent ways and walked the path of peace. We also know that Mr. Agahinde Hichilema has been scheming, trying to incite his members to reject the outcome of the just-ended election under a ploy to push for a government of national unity, because he has now realized that Zambians will never make him president, and he wants to get into government through the back door, create violence, then push for a meeting with President Lungu, use the international community and some donor agencies that are supporting him, so that he can push for a government of national unity in the hope of becoming vice president in that kind of arrangement and eventually president. That will not happen. The Zambian people spoke and loudly. The will of the Zambian people is very clear. They elected President Edgar Gachagua Lungu. He is the president-elect until and only if the Constitutional Court is going to overturn that.
Hakainde Hichilema, I understand, has condemned the ongoing violence and has called for calm. Does that mean that after he called for calm, the door is now open for him to meet President Lungu to address some of these concerns of violence in the country?
Pressure was mounting on him to denounce violence because he was justifying the violence. So we have to observe if he is sincere, because he has done this in the past. He condemns with the one side of the mouth, and he is fueling the same violence with the other side of the mouth. So we will observe him.
Frank Bualia is the deputy campaign manager for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clarty from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 25th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye has thanked the diaspora for the vital role they played during and after the February 2016 presidential election, particularly in bringing the struggle for democracy in Uganda to the attention of the international community. Besigye, who according to the Election Commission came second in last February's presidential poll, was released on bail last month after being charged with treason for declaring himself president following the election. The judge who granted the bail warned Dr. Besigye to refrain from acts of violence and preserve peace in the community until his case is concluded. Dr. Besigye is currently visiting the United Kingdom and soon the United States. He says he will urge the diaspora to continue to support the struggle for democracy in Uganda.
Well, they have, I think, two or three main roles. One is to support the activities at home directly through communication with their communities, and direct engagement with their communities to support whatever activities their communities are doing on the ground at home, support them logistically, support them with media visibility, support them whatever support is needed, that they are in touch with those who are taking some actions on the ground. Secondly, to continue engaging with the governments of the countries where they stay, to continuously update them about what is going on and indeed to solicit their support in the engagements with the regime at home and also their engagements with those of us who are challenging the status quo.
Dr. Besigye, you were released on bail last month, I'd say. So where are we in terms of your most recent treason case?
Well, as you may know, James, I have been arrested uncountable times. Very many times I have been produced before court on all kinds of trumped-up charges. In no charge at all have I ever had to defend myself. In other words, the regime has never as much as proved the prima facie case against me, because the accusations against me are always absolutely without any form of base. And I suspect that the current treason charges are likely to go the same way. It is now over 3 months since I was arrested and charged, but no case has been made out yet in the court that is supposed to try me. The prosecution up today has not committed me for trial to the High Court.
The judge that granted you the bail cautioned you to refrain from acts of violence and also to preserve peace in the community until your case is disposed of. Some people say, Dr. Besigye, that this is yet another strategy by not just the court, but by President Museveni to neutralize you.
Well, if it is a strategy, it is one that obviously cannot work because, as I have just stated, I have never been involved in any violent activities. Our struggle is, in fact, very, very clearly non-violent struggle. So anybody who says they are, you know, trying to cause me to avoid violence is quite on a lost path, because none of us is prosecuting our struggle through violence. But we are also aware that non-violent means of struggle are very potent, and that is why the regime is extremely worried. That is why the regime is very violent. Indeed, when I was released from jail, you may have seen scenes on the Kampala streets where the police was engaged in unprecedented kind of violence against peaceful citizens that were welcoming me out of jail. And happily, as a result of international and local pressure, the police leaders who were involved in those heinous crimes have now been suspended from their jobs and are facing charges.
Chisa Besigye is the former presidential candidate for the Forum for Democratic Change Party of Uganda. He was speaking with me from Oxford, United Kingdom. Zimbabwean police clashed again on Wednesday with supporters of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's opposition movement for Democratic Change Party, who were protesting against police brutality. About 60 people were arrested during the protest. As Thomas Chiripasi reports from Harare, the protest was organized by the youth wing of the MDC party.
The youths, who marched from their party's Harvest House headquarters, clashed with police near Parliament, resulting in the protesters throwing stones and other missiles at the police, who retaliated by firing tear gas and used water cannons and gunshots to disperse them. Freelance journalist Lucia Sini was also beaten by the police during the skirmishes. The protesters intended to submit a petition to Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo, but failed to do so as a result of the clashes. Chairperson of the MDCT's Youth Assembly, Hepimo Chidziva, who addressed the protesters before taking to the streets, said time has now come to face President Robert Mugabe's administration head on for allegedly failing to run Zimbabwe.
We are here to save our Zimbabwe. We as MDCT youth today bring in an action plan for liberating our motherland from the jaws of the tyrant, from a government that sees fit to purchase luxurious ministerial cars for over $40 million, spending money on travel and subsistence from Mugabe and his henchmen, to endless and nonsensical trips around the globe, when hospitals have no drugs just to attend a dance festival in India. We cannot stand and watch this tomfoolery. History must judge us harshly. Posterity will be cruel to us if we fail to act.
The Youth Wing's general secretary also complained that Mr. Mugabe had failed to provide the 2.2 million jobs that he promised before his re-election in 2013. Chidziva warned the police against using maximum force on protesters, saying their duty was to protect citizens.
It's time for Mugabe and his regime to stand aside. We can't trust them with our future. And a man who is still sleeping at TV while standing cannot be fit to continue ruling over this once great nation.
During the protest, a number of cars, including a police vehicle and another one belonging to the state broadcaster, Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, were set on fire. At the same time, Choppy's supermarket owned by Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko was looted. Police spokesperson Charity Charamba told Studio 7 by phone that more than 60 people were arrested in connection with the protest. Today's protest came at a time when opposition parties have announced that they will stage more peaceful marches in Harare on Friday to demand key electoral reforms ahead of the 2018 elections. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Communities in southern Kenya are slowly embracing special ceremonies for girls known as alternative rites of passage instead of female genital mutilation. Lenny Ruvaga takes us to one such event in Oluwatoktó in Kenya.
This is Oluwatoktó in Kajiado County in southern Kenya. Today, around 400 Maasai girls are undergoing a ceremony to mark their transition from girls to women. This cultural rite of passage used to involve female genital mutilation. But today, the girls are getting a special blessing from the elders. It is known as alternative rite of passage, or ARP.
I'm happy because I have undergone ARP. And I've undergone FGM because it causes a lot of diseases, and a girl bleed, and a girl may die, and also I have undergone because we have told our parents the bad effect of FGM, and now they have lived it.
In Kenya, FGM is illegal, but the practice continues. Lasarian Katau worked as a female circumciser for more than 20 years. She says she cut around 200 girls. Today, she is an avid advocate of ARP. She leads the girls in 2 days of classes on the lessons in womanhood.
Some of the elders have not embraced alternative rites of passage, and you know they are the decision makers, so that's a major challenge. But in our village, we have embraced it because of information and education.
ARPs started in Kenya 7 years ago, but an estimated 100,000 girls still undergo FGM in Kenya each year. Nice Nailante, a fellow from U.S. President Barack Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative, is a global ARP ambassador for the Nairobi-based nonprofit UMREF Health Africa. She herself escaped FGM at the age of 8.
We should invest in education because all these harmful traditional practices, female genital mutilation, early marriages, teenage pregnancies, if we are not educating our girls, if we are not investing in education, they will never end. But once we realize that there is an importance of educating our girls, the same as educating our boys, that is when as a community we will be able to move forward.
At the end of the ceremony, the girls are presented with certificates, proof of their transition. For girls such as Sabina, ARP is one step to leveling the playing field and ensuring girls get equal opportunity to succeed. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Oluwatoktó, Kenya.
A new report finds that youth unemployment is set to rise this year and that many of those who do find jobs are earning a poverty wage. The International Labour Organization expects youth unemployment to reach 13.1% in 2016 and remain at that level throughout 2017. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The International Labour Organization reports youth unemployment globally is expected to rise by 500,000 this year, bringing the total number of unemployed to 71 million. It notes this is the first such increase in 3 years. Of even greater concern, says the ILO, is the large number of young people who live in extreme or moderate poverty despite having a job. Most are in emerging and developing countries. It says 37.7% or more than 156 million young employed people are living on less than $3.10 per day. ILO senior economist Stephen Tobin tells VOA the working poverty rate is above 70% in developing countries.
You're right to point out that the challenge within developing countries is very much a sub-Saharan African story. And you're also right to point out that in many of these instances, the working poverty rates are associated with high levels of informality among youth.
The report finds working poverty rates among young people also are high in Arab states and southern Asia. While the numbers are lower in developed countries, it notes young people in the more advanced economies are at higher risk of poverty than the elderly. Globally, the ILO reports youth unemployment is 3 times higher than for adults. ILO Research Department Deputy Director Lawrence Johnson says another disturbing trend is the wide disparities between young women and men in the labor market. He says nearly 54% of young men are employed compared to 37.3% for women.
Despite the overall downward trend, the gap between male and female youth participation rates has persisted, which in 2016 stood at around 17-point gap. The gender gap in unemployment is particularly high in regions of Arab states and North Africa.
Johnson says the gender gap in the labor market reflects the wider gender inequality that exists in society. ILO economists say the alarming rise in youth unemployment and persistently high working poverty rates will make it very difficult to reach the global goal to end poverty by 2030. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The South Sudan government on Wednesday said that even though former rebel leader Riek Machar is being treated at the Khartoum hospital for an apparent chest infection and leg injury, it will not affect relations between the two countries. A spokesman for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said Juba will continue to do business with Khartoum on trade and other issues of bilateral interest. On Tuesday, South Sudan's Information Minister, Ahmed Bilal, told VOA's South Sudan in Focus program that Mr. Machar was in Khartoum. Sudanese journalists have reported that Machar is in Al Man Hospital, a medical facility owned by Sudan's National Security and Intelligence Service. No reporters have been allowed to speak with Machar or to the doctors. And that is it for this Thursday, August 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
In our next edition of Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on democracy and the rule of law in Uganda, join us right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.